This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Strangling Gaza, the Zionist War of Attrition in Palestine. As delegates from 90 countries and key international donor organizations gathered Sunday in Paris, on the ground in Gaza, another situation was taking place. Tuesday, December 11th, Israeli planes, 10 tanks, and armored vehicles moved into Khan Yunis in Gaza. They, Israeli Air Force planes, provided cover, but also killed 3 Palestinians, and another 3 were murdered by an IDF tank shell. This included members of the Popular Resistance Committees established in Gaza. It all took place near Sifa Crossing, and then the Israelis moved in for house-to-house raids, detaining 60 people. It was considered a routine operation by the Israeli Defense Forces, the military, the Zionist military, that has imposed a stranglehold on Gaza. And then we have Lieutenant General Ashkenazi speaking before the National Security Studies at Tel Aviv University. Quote, "You cannot defeat a terror organization," referring to the Palestinians, "without eventually taking control of the territory." "The only reason," Ashkenazi stated, "that we have been successful in Judea and Samaria," his reference to the West Bank, "is because we control the area." But he was even more explicit. "The threat to the Israeli home front is growing," warned Lieutenant General Ashkenazi. "We will find solutions, as we have for other problems." And this is going on as the claptrap goes on in Paris, as it had in Annapolis, of what might be a Zionist imperialist solution for the Palestinian people. We have on the ground what they consider the solution, the final solution. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the Ashkenazi declaration, and let's be clear, Lieutenant General Ashkenazi is the chief of staff of the Armed Forces of Israel. So when he speaks at a conference hosted by the Institute of National Security Studies in Tel Aviv, and he states the current limited army operations in Gaza impair the capabilities of the terrorists, but they will never curb all the attacks against Israel. "We are coming to the point where we will carry out a very large-scale operation." And he further stated that Israel is preparing for numerous enemies on various fronts, including foreign armies and terror groups simultaneously. He states, "The threat to the Israeli home front is growing. We are preparing ourselves on the offensive level." The chief of staff addressed the ramifications of the Second Lebanese War. And he went on from Gaza and the West Bank to the following. "In the coming war with Syria, the army will not just combat rocket attacks on Israel. We will not fight as the army has in the past. We will not just operate against rocket launchers, but we will create a situation where the other side's desire to launch attacks suffers, and the enemy will have to decide whether it will keep on fighting because our attacks will be so steep." Now, this is a clear declaration on the part of Ashkenazi that for all the Annapolis talks and the arrangements that are being discussed in Paris, they are but a cover for a larger regional war, and the strong implication is tactical nuclear weapons, where the references to Syria and the price being so steep are clearly on the Israeli agenda. That's the underlying reality of all of this talk and all of this blah, blah that we've been describing the past several weeks.
And, Ralph, this follows on the heels of statements that were made in October, as reported in Haaretz on October 18th. Public Security Minister Avi Dichter hinted at the need for an expansive Israeli Defense Forces operation in the Gaza Strip, and he did this on Army radio. This was hours after an IDF soldier had been killed by Palestinian fire in a raid in southern Gaza. Quote, either we keep the army in Gaza or we meet the explosives belt in Tel Aviv. And what they are referring to with the Palestinian fire is the resistance of the Palestinian movement to the stranglehold and the destruction of any form of Palestinian life in the Gaza Strip or in the West Bank. That is also the case for the Palestinians, the so-called Israeli Arabs who live within the Green Line. And this has led the International Committee for the Red Cross, which is a very conservative organization. It has led the Red Cross to publish a report, an incredible report given the nature of the International Committee for the Red Cross, which in its own way has been collaborating with the Zionist state, be it during the invasion of Lebanon or in the crisis that has taken place for the Palestinian people in all the years since 1948. And yet, on December 12th, the International Committee for the Red Cross published an incredible report called Dignity Denied. The Palestinian territories face a deep human crisis where millions of people are denied their human dignity, not once in a while, but every day, the Geneva-based agency said. And its spokesperson, Beatrice Megavand Rogo, the ICRC's head of operations for the Middle East and North Africa, was more explicit. Quote, the measures imposed by Israel come at an enormous humanitarian cost, leaving the people under occupation with just enough to survive, but not enough to live a normal and dignified life. You can see this report on the internet at the International Committee for the Red Cross's website, icrc.org. It's a short report published November 2007. And what the ICRC says is the Palestinians live in an arbitrary environment. Nothing is predictable. Rules can change from one day to the next without notice or explanation. And they cite the case of Abu Dis. 30,000 people live in the West Bank town of Abu Dis. 50% of the 187 businesses along a road have been closed because of the separation highway that was built by the Zionist state. But most of all, when they describe the Gaza Strip, and also in the Washington Post, an incredible article appeared on December 15th about beggary, what has the Gaza Strip has been reduced to this condition of beggary. And here we will discuss today on Taking Aim the situation in the Gaza Strip. Ralph?
To be a Palestinian means to face limits in every aspect of life. We are blocked everywhere. We lose our jobs. We cannot travel freely. We are separated from our families. To be a Palestinian means to be deprived of things that to others are normal. Nothing is predictable. In the Gaza Strip, as well as in the West Bank, Palestinians face continuously hardships and simply going about their lives. They are prevented from doing what makes up the daily fabric of most people's existence. The Palestinian territories face a deep human crisis where millions of people are denied their human dignity not once in a while, but every day. This is the language of the International Committee of the Red Cross. It is difficult to find medication, antibiotics. We have already run out of cereals. These days, milk powder for babies is impossible to find. When you do find it, it is unaffordable. The price has increased dramatically. Again, the report. First, they took land for the road. Then they took more land for the security zone along the road. Then they destroyed my house because it was too close to the security zone. And now they have leveled the land again. I have nothing left. This report is the most extraordinary in its completeness and in the language which I have rare to see in any official document, let alone one from as collaborative an instrument as the International Committee for the Red Cross.
According to the World Food Program, some 80,000 Gazans have lost their jobs since June 2007. That is only since June 2007. 44% of the working population is jobless. Many industries have shut down. 95% of local production depends on imports of raw materials from the Zionist state. Yet the Zionist state has restricted imports to what it deems so-called basic goods, mostly staple food products. But we have found out since this report in November 2007 that even these food imports and medicines are not coming in to Gaza. Thus, the ICRC estimates 5,000 farmers in Gaza and their families that rely on the exports of cash crops like carnations or strawberries suffer 100% drop in sales. That is, nothing is going out of Gaza. 823 ill people, nearly one quarter of the 3,568 requiring medical care outside Gaza, were prevented from leaving the territory for treatment either in Egypt, the West Bank, or in the Zionist state itself. And this has led to the deaths of young children and adults, and deaths that could have been prevented if these people had received medical care. As Scott Wilson writes in the Washington Post, sealed off by Israel, Gaza reduced to beggary, that appeared Saturday, December 15th. He discusses the deaf children in Gaza who attend the Atfaluna Society for Deaf Children School. They no longer have batteries for their hearing aids. And so for the 21st grade students, tuning into voices become unintelligible echoes in their ears. This means that these children do not learn to speak. He states that the United Nations reports that 1.2 million of the 1.5 million people who live in Gaza rely on UN food aid, and this aid is not getting in. Ralph?
This article describes the condition of those children who are suffering from hearing loss. 20,000 Gazans whose hearing loss precludes even the rudimentary signs of language. As the report describes it, this is not just an isolated situation. This population is dependent for funding largely on the kindness of strangers. Their condition resembles the larger estrangement of Gaza. A fenced-in chaotic jumble of squalid refugee camps set amid rubble-strewn dunes that might someday be purchased for resort hotels overlooking a turquoise sea. Work is rare. Food is scarce. Gasoline is so hard to come by that Mahmoud al-Khazanzar has hung an effigy of a man in a suit above the entry gas pumps. The sign pinned to the hanging man's chest reads, "The Man in Charge." Israel delivers electricity that provides 60% of the territory's energy, and this supply is continuously cut off or reduced to virtually nothing. What are the consequences? Shifa's hospital is out of 85 essential medicines and has used up almost 150 others. Dialysis has been cut back from three times a week to infrequent and rare, even for the most critically ill kidney patients, over 900 of them. A stack of nearby two dozen blood cleaning machines gathers dust, awaiting spare parts that the Palestinian doctors state have not been allowed through by the Israelis. The Minister of Health, Bassam Naim, stated that he is husbanding a two-week stock of anesthetics at a time that Israel is threatening to mount a broad military offensive. They have turned Gaza into an animal farm. We are only allowed to get what keeps us alive, and barely that. This article, which is quite elaborated, goes into detail of the conditions in every part of Gaza, hospitals, schools, refugee camps, elimination of the houses. The Gazans are caught between Israel's concrete guns and the Mediterranean. A sense of crisis is pervasive as they struggle to keep their lives intact. They are unable to obtain essential food from a shrinking stock. They cannot educate their children. The strangling of Gaza, described here as Gaza reduced to beggary by Scott Wilson, is in itself, as all can understand, a crime against humanity.
And, Ralph, as we've mentioned time and again, what the Zionist state has created in Gaza in the West Bank is very similar to the Warsaw Ghetto situation, where you have a complete barricading and stranglehold. And this is the model, as we have pointed out in years past. Again, writing about the human rights situation, an article appearing in the Electronic Intifada, December 14th, human rights concerns regarding Gaza health care access report that came from Jerusalem from the IRIN. The isolation of the Gaza Strip is intolerable, said a senior World Health Organization, that's the WHO official, on December 10th, urging better access to Gaza for medical care. Ambrogoli Mananetti, head of the WHO in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, said that medical professionals must take a stand against the current situation. This is heavy language for the World Health Organization. Mananetti was speaking at a WHO symposium with Physicians for Human Rights Israel, PHRI, and the Gaza Community Mental Health Program. He described, and other members of the Physicians for Human Rights Israel also described, the situation in Gaza that prevents people from getting medical care. Not only the elimination of supplies, but the refusal of the Zionist state to allow those in desperate need of use of equipment such as MRIs, which are not available in the Gaza Strip, access to Jerusalem. Bassam al-Wahidi, age 28, from Rafah in southern Gaza, said doctors told him several months ago that without proper treatment for an eye problem, he would lose his sight, and they referred him to a hospital in East Jerusalem. He received a permit and went to the northern Erez crossing. But after waiting for 3 hours, he was taken into a room for interrogation. He said, I waited in the room for over an hour. Then an officer began asking me questions like my name and my family. The officer moved on to questions about militants, saying, quote, as a journalist, you must know things about them. The officer then asked him to work together, that is, to collaborate in tracking militants who fire rockets into southern Israel. When al-Wahidi refused to assist the Israeli security forces, he told him, it's my right to get treatment. And Wahidi has since tried to get a permit. He's failed to get this permit. The Zionists would not let him go into East Jerusalem. And Wahidi says, I have already lost sight in my right eye. If I don't get treatment soon, my sight in the other eye will be in danger. His is the same as his treatment that many people have received as they try to cross into East Jerusalem or into Egypt or into the Zionist state. Ahmed, a 21-year-old with stomach cancer, was led to have severe internal bleeding. He was denied exit from Gaza. He was deemed, quote, a security risk. On what basis? No basis. Ahmed is 21 years old, and any 21-year-old man is considered to be a militant. Ralph?
The BBC on December 14th, with reference to the International Committee of the Red Cross and its call for immediate political action to contain the deep crisis in the West Bank and Gaza, quote-unquote, the BBC. This statement is an unprecedented departure from its normal non-political stance. The Red Cross has stated that the measures imposed by Israel have denied the Palestinian population the right to a normal and dignified life. The BBC's Imogen Folks in Geneva stated that politics is not usually a word that features in the language of the International Red Cross, a neutral organization that tends to work quietly. Why do we, this is again a quote from the ICRC. Why do we call now for political action? Because actually we do not think that humanitarian aid can solve the problem. This statement is extraordinary for the ICRC. In Gaza, the whole strip is being strangled. Life there has become a nightmare. There is no solution that can be provided by humanitarian organizations. We can try to put patches on the problems and pretend, but we do not have the key to any solution that addresses the roots of this problem. This is the ICRC. It's virtually calling for revolutionary uprising. They cannot solve the problem with putting patches on the problem, on the situation. They cannot attempt to address the problem with so-called aid that doesn't get through. The 1.4, I'm quoting again, the 1.4 million Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip continue to pay with economic containment that is destroying their health and their livelihoods. In the West Bank, the Israeli settlements affect every aspect of Palestinian lives and leads to the loss of their land and income with recurrent violence by the Israeli state and by settlers. Exhausting movement restrictions hinder access to work and have produced unprecedented levels of unemployment and poverty and desperation. Only innovative and direct and prompt political action could change this harsh reality and this long-standing occupation and even begin to restore normal social and economic life to the Palestinian people or allow them to live their lives in dignity. When the International Committee of the Red Cross begins to sound like a revolutionary organization, brothers and sisters, you can begin to imagine and understand the depths of the punishing, devastating siege of destruction that has been launched against the people of Palestine.
Ralph, let's look at an explicit example. An article appeared November 16th in The Independent in Great Britain. Israel's economic blockade stops Gaza's strawberry farmers selling their crop. And what's interesting to note is that now in the Gaza Strip, they grow strawberries, they grow carnations for export. But at one time, the Gaza Strip had an incredible crop of citrus, and the Zionist state stopped the citrus crop because these were trees, and the military felt that trees provided cover for the Palestinian militants, and so the trees, the amazing citrus crop of the Gaza Strip, was mowed down. The trees were cut, and the farmers had to transform their crops, and that's why they sell low-growing crops like strawberries and carnations, the flowers, much of which goes to Holland, but it is not reaching the market now. As the article in the Independent states, much of the crop will rot, for the Kearney closure, that is the Kearney exit point into the Zionist state, means that the farmers cannot import the extra plastic sheeting that is needed to protect strawberries from the rains that are due any day now or the winter frosts a matter of weeks away. Mr. Hamdeya, who borrowed more than £13,000 in plantation costs before the season, will simply go bust. The 8,000 families employed in Gaza's production of strawberries, cherry tomatoes, and carnations, the bumper crop of which has already started to be destroyed instead of being sent to the Dutch auction houses for which it was planted. They will lose their modest income. Instead, this proud farmer says with a tinge of contempt in his voice that he will just be left to go to the UN and collect food coupons. And as we stated before, most of the population of the Gaza Strip has to rely upon this UN food aid.
Maya, the article on the strawberry crops applies to all agricultural produce in Gaza. It applies to tomatoes. It applies to cucumbers. It applies to all the means of sustenance. quote, what is preoccupying Mr. Hamadeh as he surveys his acres of strawberry plants in this isolated, dangerous place is another peculiar Gazan tragedy. The absolute economic and commercial blockade to which it has been subjected by Israel. The absolute economic and commercial blockade. As the article makes clear, they cannot export. They cannot grow. They cannot sustain with food supplements for the crop. They cannot provide adequate water. This is a state of siege. I am not Fatah. I am not Hamas, said Mr. Hamadeh. I am a farmer. They should pay condolences in the farmers' houses. We built this market with our blood. If I lose this market, I lose my life. He speaks of the long-term effects of the collapse of his small business. I have 12 children. How can I do anything for them? What do I offer them now? Why should they listen to me? They will become fighters in the future. Ahmed Shafi, the director of the cooperative and a retired headmaster, we have no exports. All we have here are social problems, misery, and poverty. That is, again, here is the supplement to this description by Mr. Shafi. Above all, they depend upon sweet water. But what do they have now? Brackish, salty, polluted supply in all of Gaza. It's not just a question of fruit growing. It's a matter of children's survival, of family survival. They used to call what we grow here in our citrus plantations yellow gold. But in 1968, the occupying Israelis, major citrus producers with Palestinian land, made that no longer possible. The Israeli forces used their bulldozers to bulldoze the grounds on which citrus and strawberries and other crops were growing, claiming that the agricultural production of Gaza afforded, quote, cover to militants. Today, we cannot plant citrus or other crops. They claim they are for security reasons. They will not allow us to plant vegetables. They will not allow us to plant fruit. They will not allow us to plant strawberries. What are we dealing with here, brothers and sisters? The utter eradication of the viable life of an entire society for the colonial project of the Zionist state to convert these people into a starving remnant, a pauperized people completely dependent upon the exploitative Zionist master.
And Ralph, the amount of fuel that was delivered to Gaza daily was 160,000 gallons of fuel, of which 80,000 were required to meet basic needs. And you mentioned safe drinking water. Because of the fuel shortages, the stranglehold, the cutting off of fuel to Gaza, which, by the way, was allowed by the Israeli Supreme Court, because of the fuel shortages, generators that are used to pump water from wells in many neighborhoods have been shut down. Also, wastewater treatment plants across the territory have been affected by lack of fuel. That means raw sewage flows through the Gaza City streets. And after a partial closure of the main wastewater treatment plant, which served 400,000 residents. According to people in the Gaza hospitals, quote, we have 30% of the fuel in stock for Gaza's 12 hospitals and 52 primary care centers. Medical employees have been unable to travel to work. Vaccinations and medications are spoiled without the refrigeration because they rely upon generators. And an Israeli fuel company, Dor Alon, provided 20% less fuel than had been ordered for Gaza. And this was on the basis of an army order of October 28th. This is before the massive shutdown of fuel. And I should also like to mention that the Palestinian Authority had not paid the Israeli company that provided fuel, and that company had also shut off the supply of fuel to the Gaza Strip. Ralph?
Maya, in the September-October issue of Groundwater, And by the way, the author's Avner Vengosh is associate professor in the Department of Geological and Environmental Science at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev. And Erica Weinthal is associate professor of political science at Tel Aviv University and an associate professor in the Nicholas School of the Environmental and Earth Sciences at Duke. Their publication on this subject also appeared in Science Daily. It's called Contaminated Water Presents Biggest Crisis in the Gaza Strip. The quality of water in Gaza has reached crisis proportions. The groundwater in the Gaza Strip, the only source of water for its rapidly growing population over 1 million, is unsuitable for drinking by any standard owing to the high levels of salinity, nitrate, and boron pollution. The quality of good drinking water, vital for the survival of the population of the Gaza Strip, is totally lacking. Lack of adequate drinking water in the Gaza Strip is a daily reality. The report is devastating, and its source speaks volumes for what really is occurring in the Gaza Strip today, brothers and sisters.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Strangling Gaza, the Zionist War of Attrition in Palestine. It is the third part of our series on the Palestinian struggle. Ralph?
Maya, Rami Al-Mahari, in Live from Palestine, on the 22nd November, Israel denying medical treatment in Gaza. We have been waiting for urgent referral to an outside hospital for 6 days until he died today, said Dr. Ismail Yassin in response to the death of more patients at the Gaza Children's Hospital. Tamir Al-Yazji, 12-year-old chickenpox patient, died on his hospital bed. Tamir's condition had gotten worse, symptoms of blood problems in the brain, because the ill-equipped hospital had no means of addressing the issue. Working in conditions without fuel supplies, without medicines, without water, Gaza's Children's Hospital is hospitalizing a number of patients, including infants and cardiac disease patients. Director of the hospital's intensive care unit, Dr. Shirin Abed, said her unit attempts to provide care for infants in desperate need of medication. There is no medication. The article is replete with the examples of the total destruction of medical services. The hospitals lack basic equipment, MRI scanners, dialysis machines, elementary sanitary and mechanisms, anesthesia for the anesthesiologists.
Ralph, an article in The Australian went even further. December 14th.
That's Martin Chuloff, in the Middle East correspondent of the Australian. Yes, please, Maya.
Blockade of Gaza even makes dying difficult. The last 2 years, he writes, have been tough to live in Gaza, and now it's become difficult to die. The ever-tightening siege of the Gaza Strip has seen stocks run dry of raw materials for most of death's necessities. There is no cement for graves, no iron or mortar to seal them, and precious little white cloth in which bodies must be wrapped for a proper Islamic burial. The dearth of supplies has seen the price of burials soar by almost 50%, and that's after Gaza's grieving families have had to deal with price spikes along the line. Materials used to wash bodies have almost doubled in cost, and so rare and costly is the white cloth known as bafta, it's almost become a precious commodity. Cement and some fabrics have been on the list of basic raw materials that are banned by Israel, and so is iron and most basic building materials. Only products deemed essential, such as food, some medicines, and limited foods, have been allowed into Gaza since June. And that, as we have noted, have been very little food, very little medicines.
Yes, Maya. The article states, I have been here 37 years. It has never been like this. The poverty here is unbelievable. Israel has banned the import of an entire range of commodities and products deemed essential. It's not only cement and fabrics, but iron and all basic building materials. This siege is tightened. Since Hamas's victory in Gaza in June, Gaza's 1.4 million population states that the siege amounts to collective punishment and is steadily ruining their lives. And here again is an article in Haaretz on the 16th of December, an important article called Bring Us War in Gaza by Zvi Barel. In the end, we are going to enter Gaza. Not because a major blow or wide-scale operation will convince 1.5 million people living under siege conditions in poverty that they have nothing left to lose. This sense of helplessness already exists in any case. If civilian targets are hit, and this time we're talking about civilians, the people might rebel against Hamas. If the Israeli sanctions, which have completely reduced fuel supplies, if our plans to cut electricity, to close the crossing points, to prevent the movement of goods were working, we wouldn't need a military attack. Can a military operation succeed where sanctions are failing? This is precisely the moment to remember what we're really attempting to do. The Israeli Defense Forces once fully controlled Gaza, and we will do so again. The IDF's entry into the Strip with its armor and aerial might will produce a result that is long overdue. We know that Gaza is not Jenin refugee camp. Gaza is a maze of alleyways with thousands of children, women, and old people and ordinary men who do not fire Qassams or set off explosives. Accordingly, what the IDF has fed the media in recent weeks, that Gaza has an abundance of explosives, weapons of all types, and plenty of motivation to fight, is preparation for the IDF to make a generalized attack on the population itself. We shall enter the populated areas. We shall operate area vehicles and fire freely. The wide-scale operation, we should understand, will make clear the ineffectiveness of sanctions and attest to the failure of merely small-scale or targeted operations. The purpose of a wide-scale operation is to satisfy the lust for prestige because this state must do something dramatic and continuous. This is a formulation for genocide under whatever guise, under whatever rubric, under whatever blah blah language. The intent is to wage total war on a desperate population by all means available to the Israeli armed forces.
And Ralph, it is a population that remains stalwart and militant, as we had 250,000 people mobilize on the anniversary of Abu Ammar, Chairman Yasser Arafat's death, for support of Fatah. We also had recently, on this past Saturday, 500,000 people mobilize in Gaza for the 20th anniversary of the formation of Hamas. And the main statement of this mobilization was resistant to the Zionist state, with a large banner hanging from a nearby building reading in Arabic, English, and French, quote, "We will not recognize Israel." The main statement is the self-determination of the Palestinian people and their resistance to Zionism. And as this is going on, as this stranglehold is going on in Gaza and the stranglehold of the West Bank, which we discussed last week, we have, as a result of the Annapolis discussions and claptrap that has been going on for the past 15 years since the Oslo conference in 93, what we have going on in Paris as we speak are discussions of collaboration of the Palestinian bourgeoisie with the imperial forces. And we also have discussion that has been taking place among all these major donors called the AIX, named after a city in France and a university where many of these discussions are going on, the A group, with this discussion of how to have the full dispossession of the Palestinians, that is, of the dispossessed of the Palestinian refugees. So I think we should discuss now, Ralph, what is going on in the Paris summit with the financing of the Palestinian Authority over the next 3 years, a $5.8 billion discussion between 5. $5.6 and $5.8 billion pledges over the next 3 years for the collaboration with the Palestinian bourgeoisie and also the A Group statements.
Well, first of all, Maya, put this in its context, as Wafa Amr made clear in Agence France-Presse, the Palestinian economy is near total collapse. This is the article that appeared on October 28th. One-third of Palestine is food deprived. That's a euphemism for starvation. Those are the actual conditions on the ground. The West Bank fence severs Palestinian farmers from fields, but it's only 60% completed, according to Haaretz. The steady theft of Palestinian land advances. So all of this talk about aid has to be put into the context of what is taking place on the ground.
Here, and, Ralph, there are 550 checkpoints in the West Bank alone, 550 checkpoints in a very small area, and the Zionist state has stated unequivocally that they are not going to open up these obstructions to any movement as long as they feel, as the Zionist state feels, that there is any possibility of a lack of what is called security.
By the way, to make before we address the economic issues per se, let me give this particular citation from the Palestine Committee for Human Rights. Over 600 Palestinians have been killed in what is called extrajudicial killings since 2000. That's over 90 a year. These are assassinations. Official assassinations of 90 Palestinians. So every effective leader, every person who is articulate, able to command a following, able to express the desires and aspirations of the Palestinian population, targeted for assassination, 600 extrajudicial assassinations since 2090 a year. That's the backdrop to this talk. Palestinian entrepreneurs plan two built-from-scratch cities in the West Bank. That's the International Herald Tribune. Yeah, they're going to have new cities built. West Bank in this ancient land where communities have grown helter-skelter, the future now looks more like a well-tended U.S. suburbia. Powerful entrepreneurs are planning two built-from-scratch West Bank cities with thousands of homes, malls, high-tech call centers, and hotels. What are they planning here, brothers and sisters? A tourist trap. For billions of dollars to create a facility for profiteering while you have a pauperized peon population subject to exploitation, subject to constant subjugation in the surrounding areas.
What the 90 countries and international organizations that have sent delegates to Paris, similar to the countries and international organizations such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund sent to Annapolis. Of the discussions of the $5.6 billion, some 70% would go towards the Palestinian Authority's huge budget deficit. That is for the public sector, primarily for security. And an article in Haaretz showed exactly what is in mind. The article from showed in October 17th that 500 more security forces were then sent to Nablus as part of an overall Palestinian security plan for the West Bank, said Acting Minister of Information Riyad Malki. Now, these are Palestinian security forces that are trained by the collaboration of the United States and the CIA and the Zionists, and they were trained in Jericho, and they're sent into Nablus to suppress the population. And this is where the funding is going primarily. 30% is scheduled to fund women's activities and education, supposedly after the deficit, which means the deficit for funding the security forces is in place. But in the remaining moments, I would like to talk about the A Group, because this really shows you the full collaboration of the Zionists, the imperialist forces, and the Palestinian bourgeoisie. On Tuesday, this is an article from Haaretz, Refugees and Jerusalem, A Question of Money, that appeared on November 24th, and also an important article written by Netta Golan, December 6th, The A Group and the Palestinians, A Generous Offer. And these are two articles that are very important to look at. On Tuesday afternoon, writes Akiva Eldor in Haaretz, after being delayed at the Kalandia checkpoint on his way into Israel from Ramallah, Saeed Bamya arrived at the Defense Ministry's office in Tel Aviv. The former Deputy Minister for Economic Affairs in the Palestinian Authority entered the office of Major General Amos Gilad with Professor Ari Arnon. Bamya and Arnon presented Gilad, the defense minister's representative on the team, formulating a statement for the Annapolis summit with a thick document that sets forth possible political economic solutions for two of the major core issues, the Palestinian refugees and Jerusalem. For Bamya, the assessment of the A group comprises of Israeli, Palestinian, and international experts that the cost of resolving the issue of the right of return will run between $55 billion and $85 billion. And this is what it is based upon. There are four aspects. One, that a substantial number of refugees will move to new places. New places means Jordan and other countries. And this is at a cost of $8 billion to $19 billion. Others will be rehabilitated in their current locations. That means in refugee camps throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And they will receive compensation, quote, in kind or in money at a cost of $10 billion to $14 billion. Now, each refugee, that's the majority of the Palestinian population, will rank his priorities, and a time frame for completing the process will be agreed. That is, the priorities of how much money they're willing to take and where they're willing to settle. Settle, that is the key word here. And also, what is the expected compensation, quote, on a full and fair basis between $15 and $30 billion? Restitution, as they call it, will be considered only in those cases where full and fair compensation has not been offered and where the properties exist in a form that can make restitution practical and equitable. $22 billion for compensation related to refugeehood. What a word, refugeehood. All registered refugees will receive a uniform amount of $5,000 each. Currently, a refugee family of six or seven people makes do on $1,000 a year, so they think they can buy them off with $5,000. And these are the discussions of the A group. The meetings are and accommodations are provided by Paul Cézanne, a Marseille University, the Paris Center for Peace, and Data Studies and Consultations of Bethlehem. So we have here the collaboration of the imperialists is taking place in France, the Paris Center for Peace from the Zionist state, and the Data Studies and Consultation of Bethlehem representing the collaborating Palestinian Authority. And other partners, the European Union, French donors, the World Bank, the Development Research Center in Canada, the General Council of Bouches-du-Rhône, and the Regional Council of Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur. Ralph.
Maya, let's be clear here. In this discussion at the conference at AIX, the A group and the Palestinians, there's a very revealing reality that's unfolded. According to Salman Abu Sita, an expert on the Palestinian, quote, refugee issue, 90% of the village sites from which the Palestinians had been driven out remained vacant. Only 7% are partially built over, and only 3% are totally built over in Tel Aviv and West Jerusalem. Now, that's an extraordinary revelation. You see, there's nothing to stop the return of the Palestinian refugees to their homes except the Zionist colonial project, except imperialism itself. There's no physical impediment. 11.2 million Palestinians, brothers and sisters. 5.3 million Palestinians, closer to 5.7 million, inside the Green Line, inside the Gaza Strip, inside the West Bank. It's roughly equivalent to what the population of settlers is. By 2010, the Palestinians inside this area will have a majority. So what are we really describing here? Well, Avigdor Lieberman, the deputy vice prime minister and the minister for strategic affairs, has published yet another declaration. He says, let's stop prettying up the situation. The Palestinians will overwhelm us. Popular growth. We cannot allow that. We are not going to tolerate that. All this is about removal. One form or another of removal. By attrition, by expulsion, by political arrangement, by money. It's about removal. Removal. Elimination and removal.
Ralph, those were the words of Meir Kahan, as everyone will remember, his important article where he said what we have here is a demographic problem.
And here's what Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni stated on Sunday when she met with Mahmoud Abbas, ahead of the International Donor Conference in Paris, designed to garner billions to help, quote, bolster the Palestinian economy. She stated, "This growth must be accompanied by an increased crackdown on all militant groups. Palestinian economic growth cannot occur except in the context of removal of resistance to Israel." That's the assignment. That's the predicate. That's the task. Subjugation. And the sellout agents of the Central Intelligence Agency are the vehicle for doing this. One point about this entrepreneur's capitalist vision of a subjugated Palestine. Government report. 1.65 million Israelis are living below the poverty line. That's 1.65 million Israelis. That's 40% of the entire population. Of course, there's a concentration amongst Israeli Palestinians in that poverty level. But over 22% of the settler population itself now lives below the poverty line. Quote, "Israel's growth benefiting only the wealthiest," Ruth Sinai in Haaretz, on the 16th of December, "only Israel's wealthiest 20% are benefiting from economic growth of the past 3 years. 44%, while in 2004, and 44.8% in 2006 are losing income, while the top fifth share of national incomes rose. The bottom 70% saw its share of income decline dramatically. What is the reality on the ground? The study of the needy asking for food in Israel has doubled in the last 5 years, Ruth Sinai reports on the 5th of December. So the pauperization of the settler population, focused, by the way, on the Palestinian Arabs and on the Oriental or the Arab Jews. So the classic colonial capitalist paradigm for a devastated Palestinian people of the West Bank and Gaza is replicated within the Zionist state itself, brothers and sisters. That is the logic of capitalism and imperialism, and that is the political moment when a revolutionary struggle for a liberated Palestine will incorporate not just the Palestinians inside the Green Line, but the Oriental Jews, who are the majority of the settler population. They are Arab Jews, of the increasingly pauperized working class within the settler population itself. A Zionist state, even if anchored on a ship off of Haifa, would be an outrage. Its logic is genocide. Its mandate is exploitation. Its fate is in the hands of politicians who are whores for capitalism and imperialism, and whose logic is suppression, subjugation, expulsion, and death. There's only one way forward in Palestine, and that is a struggle for the liberation of that population that will sweep this remnant of decadent oppression into the ashcan of history where it belongs.
And, Ralph, this is the sentiment of Palestinian people. A study that was done by Nadim Ruhana and published in The Nation, Israel's Palestinians Speak Out, an article posted online December 11th, reflects a poll that he conducted. And this poll states, nearly three-quarters of Israel's Palestinian citizens rejected the idea of the Palestinian Authority making territorial concessions that involve them. And 65.6%, that's more than half, maintained that the Palestinian Authority lacked the mandate to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. Remember, these were the words of President Bush, the words of Olmert, and the acceptance of Mahmoud Abbas on behalf of the Palestinian Authority that Israel is a Jewish state. Nearly, of course, that is what the all the Constitution and official documents of the Zionist state say. Anyway, nearly 80% declared, this is 80% of the Israeli Arabs, the Palestinians, declared that the Palestinian Authority lacks the mandate to relinquish the right of Palestinian refugees to return. That is based on the UN General Assembly Resolution 194 of 1948. That has been reaffirmed many times, and which we discussed today with the A document, is to be overturned, is to be overruled and accepted by the Palestinian Authority as a cash instead of returning.
The funds that are being allocated, whether in Paris or at AMIA, for the reconstitution of a Palestinian economy under the control of the entrepreneurs is designed to do one thing, perpetuate pauperization, but it is explicitly declared as the cover for something that is already established on the ground. As in the article of December 17th by Ron Brayman, the division has already occurred. Zionism now. He declares that the areas of Judea and Samaria are natural parts of the state of Israel. They will be denominated by their geographical and historical names and not by the distorting terms of territories. The population of Palestinians cannot remain in the West Bank and Gaza. It cannot remain within the Zionist state or within the Green Line itself. It must be sent out to Jordan by attrition, by expulsion, by whatever means. This division has already occurred, he declares in the pages of Haaretz. And accompanying that is the following statement by Agence France-Presse. Israel is now the world's fourth largest arms exporter, shipping out arms over $4 billion so far this year. Only the United States, Russia, and France export more arms than Israel, but Israel's share is growing. The Israel Defense Ministry is bombarded with 5,000 requests for export authorizations each year and 70,000 requests for new permits for export weapons and materials. The United States is the largest purchaser of Israeli arms. The weapons industry employs 40,000 people in Israel, is expected to double. The Zionist state is linked to expansive war, the war against Iran, the war against Syria, the regional war at large. Imperialism is its master, and the requirement is a Palestinian population in starvation, prepared for expulsion. That is the only underlying reality to all the cover talks that are taking place in Annapolis and in Paris or in Madrid, and the money that is being described is to enshrine a collaborative elite in Israel, in Palestine, as in the world at large. The struggle is for a transformation of this social order, brothers and sisters.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Strangling Gaza, the Zionist War of Attrition in Palestine, was recorded on December 17th. It will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@pacbell, that's P-A-C-B-E-L-L .net. We'll be with you next week.
Tapam ta, tinakaro, tapam ta. Filon nok